Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today, we will meet a true warrior and leader both on and off the football field, Pro Football Hall of Famer Harry Carson.
We were coached so well that whatever an opposing team tried to do, we knew how to defend it because we had already seen it. I mean, we had been prepared. You know, and that's one of the good things about Parcells and Belichick, man. You are thoroughly briefed on what might happen on the field, and you're responsible for knowing it.
Harry Carson also has a message about prostate cancer.
Well, I want to tell men to get checked for prostate cancer, especially men of color.
We'll hear about that and how he's been dealing with post-concussion syndrome since 1990. All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. Number 53, Harry Carson, was a force for the New York Giants from 1976 to 1988, making 9 Pro Bowls. He helped the Giants to a Super Bowl 21 victory, and Harry Carson was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2002, the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2006, and the New Jersey Hall of Fame in 2018. It's my honor to welcome the great Harry Carson to the show. Great to see you, Harry.
All right, good seeing you.
So let's go back to January 25th, 1987. Super Bowl 21 at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California.
Yeah.
Your Giants defeated John Elway and the Denver Broncos 39-20. And for the first Giants Super Bowl win and first NFL title for the team since 1956. And I was not there.
You weren't there?
But I was watching.
You know, if you had known me, I could have gotten you tickets.
See, that would have been.
I was there.
You certainly were there.
And I had good seats. Field level seats.
As the clock was winding down, you doused head coach Bill Parcells with a Gatorade shower that, you know, has become synonymous with the Super Bowl. You were part of this big goal line stop against the Broncos that really turned the game around. But what do you remember most about that game?
I remember that we won.
You certainly did.
No, the thing that I remember probably more than anything else is we were righting a wrong, because in 85, we had a pretty good season, went to Chicago. We thought that we were better than them. We made some mistakes, and we didn't make it. And so we came back in 86 during the offseason, and everybody to a man had a much different attitude and work ethic. And there was nobody who could tell us that we were not going to go to Super Bowl 21. And we went. We won the game. And it all sort of, you know, people ask, well, you know, what was the thing that, you know, lit you guys fire? And I said it was losing to Chicago in Chicago. And but the thing that I remember probably personally more than anything else is going out for the coin toss, and Parcells told me to go by myself as a captain, and I'm walking to midfield, and to this day I really don't know exactly why he wanted me to do that. I don't know what kind of message he wanted me, but, you know, it wasn't like I said, Bill, I want to go out by myself. I don't want anybody else with me. But it served its purpose. And there are so many people who I run into, Giant fans, and they say the same thing. Man, when you walk down on the field, and, you know, Denver had 5 or 6 guys who were walking towards you, you know, they would say, man, that was so cool.
It really was. And you have said, you know, you knew Parcells on a different level because you knew him when he was coaching on the defensive side.
Yeah.
So that relationship, that I think we can even go back to the play call where you get to catch a pass on a fake field goal.
Yeah.
During your career. I think that was a tribute to Harry Carson and all the work you've done. He had so much respect for his linebacker, didn't he?
He did, because Bill was one of us. I mean, he was, when Ray Perkins took over as head coach. He brought in Bill Parcells. Parcells had myself. At one point, he had myself. He had Brian Kelly. He had Brad Van Pelt. It was one of these situations where it was one of these situations that he was one of us, you know. But when he became the head coach, he became one of them. So we knew Bill. We knew Bill on a much different level when he was, one of us, and we knew what he liked and what he didn't like, and we wanted him to be successful. Unfortunately, having Lawrence Taylor, myself, Brad Van Pelt, and Brian Kelly didn't necessarily get us to that level. So Brad Van Pelt and Brian Kelly were jettisoned from the team for, different reasons. And Carl Banks and Gary Reasons were those guys who were big linebackers who could run and get the job done. So he could do a lot with the talent that he had with the four of us, especially with Lawrence.
When you say they could run, all of you could run. I mean, you and LT had this amazing ability to blitz at just the right time. Where did that come from?
Game plan. But, playing with Lawrence, you didn't know what you were going to get. I mean, sometimes, he would do some freelancing, and they allowed him to do it because he was making plays. And he was a guy who would take chances. And I knew that if he took a chance and he failed to accomplish what he was trying to do, I would be there to fill in for him. I'd be his backstop. And so I knew how he played. He knew how I played. And that's one of the really good things about the longevity of players staying with one team and knowing that guy next to you and what he's going to do and how you guys are going to mix, together. It's not necessarily the case now, but back then, I knew exactly what Lawrence was going to do, even though he might have slept through it in meetings, when Belichick would be going over, certain defenses and so forth.
At least I do, I look at great players, not just Hall of Fame players, but great players, those who could perform in clutch situations. When we talk about Harry Carson, we talk about not only playing and winning in the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 21, making that big stop on that goal line stand, as I mentioned, but also on the way, he had a game-sealing interception and 12 tackles against the Redskins. In the 84 NFC Divisional Playoff game, he intercepted the incredible Joe Montana and intercepted a pass for a touchdown.
Montana from his own end zone has some time. Picked off by Harry Carson. Carson to the inside, the five. Carson, touchdown. Intended for Dwight Clark. The Giants are back in it. Harry Carson might not be back in it. I think he's on the bottom of that pile. He may not be able to breathe. He's the old-timer on that team, nine-year veteran. Harry Carson, he gets up shaking his head. What'd I do? I'll tell you, the offensive players aren't good defensive players. They don't tackle very well, but Harry looked like he had a few moves on that thing.
And I mentioned the fake field goal touchdown catch against the Eagles in 86. Clutch. But you're saying preparation is the reason that you could come up in the big games and make it happen.
Well, when we took the field, the one thing that I could say is we were coached so well that whatever an opposing team tried to do, we knew how to defend it because we had already seen it. I mean, we had been prepared, and that's one of the good things about Parcells and Belichick, man. You are thoroughly briefed on what might happen on the field, and you're responsible for knowing it and being ready to make any changes that might occur during the course of the game. I don't know if that's the case now with players, but we were very well coached as a defense and as a team.
I mentioned to you before we started the interview that I'm a lifelong Pittsburgh Steelers fan coming from the Pittsburgh area. And when I think of great linebackers, I think of Jack Ham, Jack Lambert, Andy Russell, and then some other guys who joined the way. Who was better, the Giants linebacker core or the Steelers linebacker core?
Do I really have to answer that?
I think I know. But, you know, very similar, if you ask me, because you all had roles. Your ability to blitz, stop the run, LT as a pass rusher, beyond comprehension. And then you had Gary Reasons and Carl Banks in the Super Bowl. They could handle, you know, Banks would certainly handle the outside like Jack Ham could. Very similar, and the reasons that both teams were Super Bowl champions. Obviously, you agree.
You're leaving out some, you know, a reason why both teams were successful. It was those guys up front. Ernie Holmes, L.C. Greenwood, Joe Green. Those guys made a difference. And when you have players of that magnitude who are great players, there's a lot that you can do. When you have those linebackers, Russell and Lambert, you know, those guys were really, really good. We were the same way. We had really good defensive linemen in front of us. You know, they brought out the best, and we played together as a unit, you know, the four up front and the three linebackers, or the three linebackers, you know, with a great nose tackle in Jim Burt. And so you have George Martin, you have Leonard Marshall, you know, those guys were really, 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 really good.
And you're absolutely right, and that's why you played the game and I didn't.
So it's first and 15 on the Giant 31-yard line. Burgess Say is back in there, the little guy on the right side. Harry Carson brings him down at midfield. The middle linebacker blitzed, and he ate up Theismann. He lost 19 yards on that blitz.
Bill Parcells said that we're going to have to rely on our linebackers for pass rush, and we just saw it from Harry Carson. You know, the big thing about that Harry Carson sack was that he took the Redskins out of field goal position.
There's only a few players that are lucky enough to douse their coach with Gatorade after a Super Bowl victory. Now it's even become they have betting on what color the Gatorade's going to be and whatnot. So when you watch, you know, the most recent Super Bowls and you see the dousing, that has to take you back to that moment where you douse Parcells, right?
Carson has changed shirts and is in the security uniform now. That's the yellow jacket that security people, and there it comes.
Well, there's two kinds. There's plain water and there's the sticky stuff. And when it has color in it, it's sticky.
You know, it's kind of nice to see that over the years, it is still the case. It is still that symbol of we are the champions. We did it like in 1986 and, you know, we didn't continue to do it, but we sort of set what winning a championship is all about. Some people can do it appropriately and some people can't.
You have been helping others for many, many years. Earlier this year, it was in September 28th, in fact, at MetLife Stadium, you were honored, celebrated for being cancer-free at the NFL Giants' crucial catch game. Mm-hmm. And for years, you've been in partnership with the Hackensack Meridian Health. You've been the face of the battle against prostate cancer, an advocate for men's health and life-saving power of early cancer screening. You had successful surgery. What do you want to say about the need for everyone to have annual checkups, screening, and take care of yourself?
Well, I want to tell men to get checked for prostate cancer, especially men of color. Go and get checked. You may not have any symptoms, but after a certain age, you want to go and you want to take care of your health. I have people, you know, one of my doctors, I'm very thankful for him showing me the way. Lester Levine, that's his name. And he was an older, you know, doctor. And 2 years after I left football, I went for a yearly physical, and he sat me down after I took my physical, and he said, "Everything is fine. Just want you to know that maybe in another 2 or 3 years, you might want to start getting screened, because, you know, you'll be, you know, 40 in a couple of years, and you really have to start thinking about, you know, getting checked." And I said, "Well, doc, let's go ahead and get started now." So at the age of 37, I was getting checked for prostate cancer. And every year I would go in and take my physical, and I'd say, "Okay, doc, let's get it over and done with." And it wasn't until this year that they saw something abnormal in my urine. They wanted to follow up. And I said, "Cool, fine." What eventually happened is they called me into the office and they said, "You have prostate cancer." And I realized, I'm like, wow. I've been running from prostate cancer for a long time, and all of a sudden, you know, I got prostate cancer. And I was able to live my way normally through this whole thing. And what I wanted more than anything else was to document everything that was going to take place. And I wanted men to see what I'm going through with prostate cancer. And, you know, if you go to YouTube and, you know, you do Harry Carson, you'll see where, you know, I was interviewed prior to surgery. I was interviewed when I was ready for surgery, and I was interviewed afterwards, and, you know, the follow-ups and so forth. And the most important thing regarding prostate cancer is you got to make certain that you get it early. You know, don't be afraid to go and apprehensive about anything. Just go get checked. Be a man about it. Please, I don't want to hear men, especially men of color, say, "No, I don't feel anything." You're not going to feel anything, because prostate cancer is like a silent killer. And if you wait too long, then that's it. And if you don't want to do it for yourself, look at your kids, look at your wife, look at your mother, look at all your relatives when you're sitting at dinner, you know, for Thanksgiving or whatever, and know that when you're screened, it's not necessarily for you. It's for your relatives. It's for those people who love you. So that's how I approach it now. Every man should know exactly what to do at a certain age. My sons now know that their father had prostate cancer. You know, that might be one of the things that my father may have had, but it was not shared with me as a cause of his death a long time ago. I mean, when I was in college, that's when he passed away.
You're a true leader, and we only have a few minutes left, and I do want to bring up the movie Concussion. I remember as a young kid watching Mike Webster run at our elementary school with his Great Dane, and he was such a massive figure and a center for the Super Bowl champion Steelers. CTE, you've had post-concussion syndrome since 1990, and I know you've spoken out at times about CTE. What do you want to tell us about that? We just have a few minutes to go.
Oh, you know, we're talking about prostate cancer and now CTE. When I left football, I kind of knew something was going on, but I couldn't really put my finger on exactly what it was. And that doctor who I applauded a little while ago, he was the one who asked me after, you know, the yearly physical, is everything, you know, you're good and everything is fine. Do you have anything else, you know, bothering you? And I said, nope. So are you sure? I said, well, I've been feeling this way and that way and blah, blah, blah. Long story short, he referred me to a specialist and went through 2 days of testing. And the diagnosis came back as a mild post-concussion syndrome. And because it had been 2 years since I'd played football, it probably was permanent in nature. And so I asked him, I said, you know, I'd never heard of post-concussion syndrome before. And it took me back to Doug Coder, who, when he left football, got kicked in the head and wound up having these severe headaches. And he eventually, you know, he passed away with a brain tumor. And I was thinking, could that be me? I wanted to get it checked. And so when I got it checked and he said, my post-concussion syndrome, I asked him, will I live? And he said, you'll live. You'll just have to learn how to manage it. And so that was the key for me, in that whenever I'm feeling depressed, whenever noise bothers me or bright lights bother me, or whenever I just don't feel right, I know in time that will pass because I'm learning how to manage it. And so, you know, I've lived with post-concussion syndrome for, you know, since the first day I started playing football. Now, I'm not going to say that, you know, what I'm about to say, a lot of people don't want to hear what I have to say, but had it not been for me quitting on the first day of football practice, I probably would have loved the game, but I never really loved playing football. The reason why I started playing football is because it was for girls, you know. It was the uniform. It was the uniform. And I quit on the first day of practice because I didn't run. I didn't do anything. I mean, coming out of South Carolina, man, it's hot. It's hot in July and August. And I didn't like the taste of quitting in my gut. And so I went back and I made it through practice. And for me, it wasn't so much about loving the game. For me, it was cherishing the relationships that I developed in high school and then went on to college, those relationships, and then drafted to play with the Giants and those relationships, and then those guys who I played with in the Super Bowl, those relationships, and after football, those relationships. It is those guys who I value more than anything else. So if I had, you know, people ask, well, would you do it all over again? Because, you know, you played football. And I would say, given what I know, if I had to do it all over again, I would not have done it. If I had to do it all over again, knowing what I know, but I didn't know, you know, certain things back then. So, but I do think that parents should make a decision as to what their kids are doing, because football is not for everybody. You know, there are some kids who go out there and they push themselves because their father played football and they're throwing their bodies around and so forth. I had concussions, but they weren't like major concussions. Now, I'm not minimizing the concussions that I did have, but you know, you hit somebody or somebody hit you and you see stars. I've never really missed a game as a result of concussions, but I know what a concussion is.
What age would you say is appropriate to have a kid play football?
That's up to the parent.
Okay.
That's up to the parent. And I'll just leave it like this. When my grandson was two, I told my granddaughter, or I told my daughter, he will not play football when he was two. Now, my grandson is bigger than me. He's like 6'3". He's like 300 pounds. And he would have been an offensive lineman if he had played football. And being an offensive lineman, he's going to be dealing with, he would deal with contact on every play
Wow.
because defensively players are coming after the running back or come. And he didn't, he wasn't a skilled player. Let's put it like that. He wasn't going to be a running back. From the age of two, I knew that I didn't want him to play. And I have to be very careful about imposing my will because he's not my child. I'm just the grandfather. His father is from South Carolina, and his dad, I'm sure his dad wanted to see him play football at some point, living in the South and Friday Night Lights and all of that stuff. Yeah, whenever I would get information regarding head trauma and certain things that young people go through in regards to the trauma that they've sustained, I pass it on to my daughter because I want her to understand what she is putting her son through if that's what they want to do. It's their decision, So the way I kind of top it off is when you leave football as a player, you go through this process of getting a physical, and they give certain parts of your body like a monetary value. Your knees are worth, I don't know, $20,000. Your shoulders, your ankles or whatever. But they don't give a price for the brain. And you can get knee replacement surgery, you can get hip replacement surgery, shoulder, replacement surgery. Can't replace the brain. You only get one. And so that's the thing. I mean, if they, when back in the 90s, the NFL acknowledged certain things regarding concussions and traumatic brain injury, but the damage is already done once you've already played. But also, I've done a lot of work with soldiers who have experienced bomb blasts, head trauma from that standpoint. Even women who have been equestrians who get on a horse and they ride and they fall 100 times, they fall, but that one time that they fall and they're not able to get back on a horse. And so it has been a very interesting ride for me to just understand that when you damage the brain, your life probably will never ever be the same.
Yeah, it's a powerful statement. If you were in charge of the NFL, how would you change anything regarding
You
CTE?
can't. You can't change because the
It's
just
a
playing,
violent sport, right? It's violent.
it's a violent sport. That is the nature of the game.
And that's why Harry Carson is not just known as Super Bowl champion, Hall of Famer, men's health advocate. He's a leader. Boy, we need more Harry Carsons in this world today, don't we? Continued good health, and we congratulate you on a successful not only pro career, but well beyond that. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can see my entire interview with Harry Carson on the WBGO YouTube channel. Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.